So this is a movie that we... What was that?
I have no idea.
What just beeped? What beeped? Where was that?
I don't know. The Cybermen are coming. We have to go.
Something just beeped. Something just beeped. So this is a movie based on a story that you and I have read.
Yes.
A long time ago.
And also watched.
Who Goes There? By John W. Campbell, who was the editor of Weird Tales, I think.
Don't you have the book?
I do. I do have the book. He was the editor. He wrote it under an assumed name, a pseudonym, because he didn't think it was cool to like publish his own work. He thought that would look bad. So
I mean, people do it all the time, though.
But I read Who Goes There out loud to you a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Like, a long time ago. Because I was like, I think you can deal with this. And then we watched...
Okay. You say, like, I think you can deal with this. You watched The Gremlins with me when I was, like, 5.
You keep bringing that up.
I feel like it's a valid thing to bring up. Like, I feel like, there's some things in my brain that make a lot of sense once you realized I watched The Gremlins when I was 5.
Yeah, it was too early. but I read this out loud because it's a cool short story. But the 1982 movie, The Thing, that is based on it, is not what we're watching tonight.
No, which is sad because I really love that movie.
Right. We are watching The Thing... From Another World, from 1951. And it's our first monster movie in a while.
It's our first monster movie.
What was the... We've watched stuff with creatures in it.
We've watched, like, Nosferatu.
Right, right. But yeah, I guess this is our first, like, sci-fi...
This is our first sci-fi movie.
Yeah, like, creepy alien...
Well, sci-fi thing. Movie. Besides, yeah. Frankenstein, I guess.
Right, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like, this modern sci-fi.
This is the first space movie.
Post-atomic bomb science fiction movie that we've watched, which is a thing.
Like, yeah.
This is coming on to the era where people are starting to distrust scientists a lot.
Well, I mean, I did learn a lot about this in AP US History.
About The Thing from Another World?
No, about atomic bombs.
Oh, yes.
Like having in America, like... Like, atomic bombs were like, oh, like, atomic energy makes these superheroes. But
right.
In Japan, they made giant evil lizard monsters.
Well, and
people.
Even in American pop culture, like, there was this weird, like, maybe science isn't the way to go. Maybe it is military. That's, like, what we need to, like, focus on. There's a real push and pull between the scientists and the military in all of these movies.
Which is strange.
Because...
scientists create the things that the military uses.
Right, right. But try to explain that to the general population. It's especially post-World War, like where we came out on top, you know, by the skin of our teeth in some cases. So I think it was a lot of faith in the military at this point. We didn't really start losing that until around the end of the Korean War, really in the middle of the Vietnam War is when we're...
The 60s.
Yeah. So this is directed by Christian Nyby. This is his first movie. He was the editor for Howard Hawks, who was a very famous film director. And a lot of people say this movie wasn't directed by Christian Nyby. It was directed by Howard Hawks, something that both men have gone on record in the past as saying that is not true. But that both men have basically gone on record as saying, but Howard Hawks was there every day, and he was basically teaching Christian Nyby how to direct at this point.
I mean, but being a teacher for someone... isn't the same as doing it all yourself.
Right. And I think that gives, you know, says a lot about how we think of filmmaking. Like, filmmaking isn't an individual process in the first place. Like,
that's like someone being like, oh, well, you didn't do this project because your teacher was teaching you how to do certain things.
Right. And Nyby basically said, he's like, you know, if you're studying under Rembrandt and Rembrandt takes the brush away from you, you don't grab it back from him. You sit there and you watch what he's doing. Like, and so Hawks would, like, give him notes and stuff in between takes, but... according to the actors, they were like, Hawks never gave them direction. They never heard what he said to Nyby. So I know that you'll be watching this with an eagle eye, trying to figure out what's Howard Hawks' direction and what's Christian Nyby's.
I don't even know the difference between these two people.
Oh,
like to me, they could be the exact same person.
Right. They may as well be for you. For me, too, because I'm not exactly utterly familiar with Howard Hawks' style. Nyby went on to direct a bunch of other stuff, but this was his first go, and a lot of people will say he never got better than this.
To be honest, it's probably, like, unless the differences are, like, vast and strange, I doubt most people would notice. Right. What is beeping?
I think it is my I think it is the whatchamacallit, the Bluetooth speaker I have in the other room that is probably running low on batteries because I apparently left it on 24 hours. So I will check that out after we check out The Thing from Another World. Hey everyone, I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And it's Del Toro time. It's Del Toro time, The Ecstasy of Influence, another recommendation.
I thought you were just going to start recording the episode. I was like, Dad, we haven't watched the movie yet.
Another recommendation from Guillermo del Toro, The Thing from Another World, 1951. That is what we have been talking about for the past few minutes. Ollie, are you ready to watch?
Yes.
Then let's.
I'm very excited.
Let's do it.
It was really late, and I had, like, woken up after having the weirdest, like, having a weird dream or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to give Lil my origin account information so she can play The Sims.
Okay.
And then I was like, and then I was like, but no, I can't do that, because then she'll use the credit card information and buy, like, jewelry or something. It was weird. It was weird. And I was like, no, Lil wouldn't do that. I trust Lil. And it was just this weird back and forth argument.
I was going to say, did
head.
You honestly think that Lil would...
No.
Use your credit card information. Lil, if you're listening right now, please don't steal Ollie's credit card
it's
information.
It's not even my credit card.
Please don't steal Ollie's mom's credit card information to buy your Sims necklaces.
No, not the Sims necklaces, herself necklaces. But I realized that wouldn't be possible because you can't buy necklaces through Origin. Not that that's the only thing that's wrong with the scenario
why
in
would
my
you
head.
Why necklaces?
I don't know.
Like, why? Wait, doesn't she work at a place where you can
make
necklaces?
Okay, listen, it was 4 a.m. and I had just woken up.
Why would she steal credit card information to get a necklace when she can just steal necklaces from work? Hey, Lil, don't steal necklaces from work. You could get fired. Although, you could probably design some pretty nice necklaces to steal.
Don't steal necklaces. I'm sure that they get a nice employee discount, though.
I am sure. Called free if you steal them. Free if you steal them. You stick it to the man. Hey, everyone, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
we already did this.
Wait, did we do? Okay. Right. This is the second part of this show. Mm-hmm. The second half. Where we came
Not
back.
Not even the second half, the majority of the
this
show.
This is most of the show. Although, how much do we have to say about this here movie? Wow. We watched The Thing from Another World, 1951, a movie we had been looking forward to watching for a long time. Like, we had been talking about this one.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Especially after our long string of dramas, it was nice to be like, hey, a monster movie.
It was better than watching another one of those movies.
Better than watching another drama, even though I have enjoyed the dramas. It was nice to know that there were monsters on the way. It just took a while to get to the monster.
Did it even end up getting to the monster?
I mean, there was a monster.
It just looked like a man.
It was a tall man with ugly hands.
And it was just a man.
It was not just a man. It was Gunsmoke's James Arness in his first movie role. James Arness, known for playing Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke, who he played for like 20-some years. It was a long-running show. Gunsmoke, featuring James Arness as Matt Dillon. Not the actor Matt Dillon, who plays himself every day in life.
This is the worst.
James Arness won't even talk about playing this role because it was such a nothing role. He just put on some ugly makeup and lumbered around.
I like to think that they didn't give him any direction.
They probably didn't. Or they probably gave him way too much direction considering his part, because this was directed by Christian Nyby, as we discussed last time.
Uh-huh.
We talked about the fact that Christian Nyby doesn't get a lot of credit for having directed this, and people are always like, it was actually Howard Hawks who directed it, but... the word on the street is that Nyby did a lot of direction, just he kind of had to do what Howard Hawks, kind of movie Howard Hawks wanted, which was kind of a Howard Hawksy movie. So all you smart guys out there who are like, oh, it's actually directed by Howard Hawks.
Be quiet.
Cut the guy a break. Cut the guy a break. He's an accomplished television director as well. The Thing from
which
Another
guy,
World.
Which guy are they cutting a break?
Christian Nyby. Christian Nyby.
We're all students at some point in life.
Yes.
And just because I got help from a teacher on my History Day project doesn't mean I didn't make the project.
Right. Even though you did have to pay that teacher $50.
No, I didn't.
So, in brief, what happens in The Thing from Another World?
Nothing.
What really happens in The Thing from Another World?
They find a man in the ice.
Who does?
The scientists and the army.
And then what do they do?
Put a heated blanket on him and he gets out.
And what does he do?
kills dogs.
He doesn't just kill dogs. He
drinks their blood.
Yes, because he is a
vampire.
Carrot. Vegetable man. And
vampire carrot.
Then he kills a bunch of people.
Does he?
He does. Off screen.
We never see a dead person.
Yeah, we never see anyone get hurt, and we certainly never see a dead body.
We do see a lot of dead bodies, though.
We do see a lot of dead dogs. Oh boy, do we see dead dogs.
All of them.
I'd say like 60% of the budget went to building dead dog bodies.
They're just real dogs, like that chicken.
They just, as in Los Olvidados, they killed the chickens. No, there's a lot of dead dogs. Content warning for people who don't like seeing dead animals on screen. There's like dead dogs shoved into boxes.
There's one dead dog shoved into a box. The other ones just kind of look like lumps of fur.
Yeah, but you're like, oh, that's a dead dog.
So like, it's not like graphic dead animal. It's just like,
right.
It's not.
But it doesn't look. It also.
It's not like they're. It's not like the '80s version.
No, but like when they find that one dead dog in the box, it looks pretty like. It looks dead. It doesn't just look like a stuffed toy dog. They made its face be all like. Arr.
I wasn't really looking at it. I don't like seeing dead animals. Dog noises, everyone.
Nog noises. So, they are confronted by this roving monster man, and then how do they kill him?
Electricity?
They kill him with electric shocks.
Because they're like, we need something hotter than fire.
Mm-hmm. And nothing hotter than fire than boards. They put electricity near the boards. I really wasn't following what the actual plan was.
They never really specified what the actual, they were like taking the wiring out of something. Mm-hmm. And you needed to walk on the boards to activate it or whatever?
He had to walk on the boards.
They looked like wooden boards, but I think they were supposed to be metal.
Yeah. And then he gets electrocuted and he burns into like a small pile. And then everyone immediately starts joking it up again. There's so much joking around in this movie. It's like, I'm not familiar with Howard Hawks' other works. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a Howard Hawks scholar. I assume, from what everyone says, it's just a bunch of joking around, because that's kind of what happens in this movie.
I think we have two scenes where we actually see the monster.
Mm-hmm, there's hardly any monster. And people are like, it's just like Spielberg's Jaws, in that he keeps the monster secret, so it's scarier. And I'm like, no, you just don't see the monster.
The monster's not scary in the first place. Literally, a man could be doing this.
There was one moment that kind of made me jump, and it was like the monster, like, smashes through a door when you're not expecting it or something, or he sticks his hand through something.
It was the, like, where they cut off its hand.
Yeah. And you're like, ah, and then that was it.
I just spent the whole movie being like, that's just a guy's hand.
It is just a guy's
hand. It's just a prosthetic hand.
Because they make the hand creepy by giving it long fingernails.
You don't even see the fingernails.
I saw the fingernails. It was all curled up. You see the fingernails. He has big, long fingernails. So,
like a girl with those long nails that you can get done.
A long nails that you can get done, yes.
At like the mall or whatever.
So this movie acrylic. Was loosely based on the 1938 novella Who Goes There by John W. Campbell, which, as we said before, we both read.
You read to me.
I read to you. And when I say this movie is loosely based...
It's loosely based.
It is about as loosely based as they come.
It's just related enough that they can say it is based,
yeah,
on this story.
The connections are it's a team of scientists in the Arctic who find a crashed saucer. They accidentally destroy the saucer, which happens in the story. They rescue the being from it. It's in ice. The ice thaws. Dogs die. There's the similarities. This movie has women in it, which the story doesn't.
Two women.
But one of them is a main character. One of them I don't think has many lines at all.
No, but she's still pretty badass. She does save people's lives quite a bit.
She does.
Because she's like the doctor.
Yeah. It also has a mad scientist. We actually have a mad scientist in this movie.
This movie is the one movie that you'll probably ever hear me say I side with the military on.
And why do you side with the military?
Because the scientists are so stupid.
So tell us what this mad scientist does. Like, what's his deal?
I'm just going to raise it like my child, because that's a great idea. Definitely hasn't tried to kill everyone on a day-to-day basis since we got here.
So do you remember the name of the doctor?
No.
Do you remember the name of anyone?
I just remember calling him Draco Malfoy.
He looks like Draco Malfoy. He looks like an angry Draco Malfoy.
So you mean just Draco Malfoy?
Yes. So his name is Dr. Carrington, and he is your archetype. I mean, we literally get the line, we have to reason with it. This is after he said, this monster is really a vegetable. And they're like, kind of like a killer carrot. And he's like, yes. He's not that arch, though. He plays him pretty, like, straightforward. He's not, like, twirling a mustache or anything.
But he could.
But he is. He is a...
He's awful, is what he is.
An awful mad scientist. Yes. There's some speculation that the reason... Okay, so... People like kind of didn't trust science at this point in the early 50s. There was a lot of like atomic blasts and a lot of like fear of the bomb and like, what are those scientists doing out there? But we could trust the military because we'd won a world war too.
How did you win that world war exactly?
Well, that depends on who you ask. There's a lot of theories which say that the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki wasn't actually necessary in order to win the war. We'd already won the war against Germany, and we were just waiting for... In other words, there was a lot of suspicion as to what scientists
that
were
That wasn't
up
the answer
days.
I was looking for, but okay. That whole mindset is like, we can trust the military, but not the science, is upsets me, because I'm like... Where do you think the military is getting all of their garbage from?
Well, at the time, people were just like, those crazy scientists with their compassion and their thirst for knowledge. So what happens is the Air Force goes to Anchorage. So you don't even get to, like, the main part of the story for a while. There's a lot of, like, flyboys and airmen and...
It's like that weird scene between the guy and the girl.
Well, yeah. So, like, okay, so... There's a reporter named Ned Scott.
Who's also really annoying.
Who's a really annoying guy. He's kind of a...
Where's my story?
He's a Stephen Tobolowsky type. He's like balding and kind of nebbish and like kind of really like, hey guys.
Have you heard anything about my story yet from your commander?
Something has crashed. Was it in Alaska? Did they set this in Alaska?
No, they set the military base in Alaska. The sciences were in the North Pole.
That's right.
That was a really weird, I feel like they just couldn't afford to have the military base set somewhere else actually than the, like, in the movie set.
It was weird. Like, you start and you go to Alaska, and you're like, okay, so we're in Alaska, and then there's a lot of scene just in, like, trust, but when we say that this is, there's a lot of talking in this movie, there's a lot of talking in this movie, and it's this Howard Hawks style where everyone's talking over each other, even if they're talking to each other, which I guess is supposed to seem naturalistic, but sometimes they start responding to things before the other character finishes their line, but before you logically could respond to things. So it just sounds at times like a bunch of people who've memorized their lines and are just trying to say them as quickly as possible, which I guess was a thing with Howard Hawks. And a few of the actors were like, I had a lot of trouble with this movie. Thank God, though, this movie would have been 2 hours long. Like, the level of over, I was like, man, they're layering their dialogue so much that if they actually said this one line after another, we'd be here all night.
We wouldn't have made it through.
We did watch it in two parts, and I will freely admit it was because I got bored partway through it. I was like, there's 30 minutes left. I gotta
get
up.
Because you were like, we don't have enough time left. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I was like, yeah, let's get up and stretch our legs. And I was like, I can't believe I'm... like bowing out of the last 30 minutes of this not even an hour and a half long movie.
It was worse than Fantasia.
It just felt long. So the Air Force goes, they find out something has crashed in Alaska, in the North Pole. They go to investigate it. And I will admit, so I saw this movie when I was in elementary school, and this scene I thought was pretty cool, and I still think it's kind of cool. They're trying to, like, map out the... So I guess what happens is that something crashed. It was very hot, so it melted the ice, and then it froze over.
Somehow, because obviously things don't retain heat for a while, right?
Right. So it's embedded in the ice now. Of course, in the book, it's been there for millions of years.
I feel like that makes more sense.
It does make more sense. I guess they were, like, trying some exciting way of, like...
You know, thinking about, like, if like in the story... If that thing had been there for millions of years, thinking about like what that species technology has advanced to in that current time period is kind of terrifying.
Right. And I guess the military is not involved at all in the original story. It's not a military outpost. It's just scientists. So I think they wanted to get the military up there. You can't really have the military wouldn't like have an outpost at the North Pole. So I guess they needed a way to get the military there, which is by having something crash. But there's a cool scene where they're standing on the ice trying to figure out what's under there. And they're like, let's all stand around the like outline of this thing. And they're all like sort of standing. And then when the camera pulls out, you see they're all standing in a giant circle. And you're like, oh, it's a flying saucer. And it's kind of, it's an atmospheric moment. Then they accidentally blow it up.
It is the stupidest thing.
Mm-hmm.
The stupidest thing. They're like, let's just blow this out of the ice. And I'm like, yes, great idea.
Yeah, they set thermite charges down there.
And they set like 50 of them.
I think the idea is that whatever the ship is made out of is extremely flammable. I don't know.
Somehow it didn't burn up in the atmosphere.
I don't understand. They accidentally blow up the whole ship. Not just blow it up, they vaporize it. It is gone.
It just leaves a man.
Not a trace. Yep. A monster man.
No, just a man.
Yeah. He's very tall.
Doug Jones is very tall, but that doesn't make him a monster.
That's true. Sorry, Doug. We love you.
Oh, although he does play plenty of monsters.
He plays plenty of monsters. So they cut him out of the ice in a big block. They bring him back to their lab, and they don't intentionally put an electric blanket on him.
No, they do.
No, the guy puts a blanket on it. He doesn't know it's the electric blanket.
No, he does. He just didn't check to see whether it was plugged in or not.
He put it on it because the thing is kind of staring at him through the
people on the watch previous to him were like, oh, it's giving me this weird vibe and blah 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 blah, yeah, blah blah. And so he was like just sitting there for a while, and I think like it's just the fear of the unknown, like what is this thing?
I guess, because it's a shame they didn't go with the whole shape-shifting aspect.
You do realize that he picked up the blanket by the blanket. Right, he would have realized if
it... Yeah, this is hot. Better put it on the ice to cool it off. It's a shame they didn't go with the shape-shifting aspect. Because even though they don't have the technology to do all the crazy special effects that like the later movie did, you can still do shape-shifting. They did it in like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You just have actors play themselves. Just are they actually the alien or not? Instead, they go this other... Well, and also there's an aspect of the short story that they could have followed up on, which is... The creature, though frozen, can send hypnotic suggestions into your mind. That's in the short story. I thought they were going to do that because they're like, oh, I don't like the look of that thing. And that's true in the short story, too. It's this sort of hideous thing frozen in the ice. But no, it's just frozen man.
Not even a man. A carrot.
A carrot, yeah. They find, because it gets out. It gets its hand cut off. They test the hand, and it's what?
Carrot?
It's vegetable matter. It's made entirely out of vegetable matter.
See, like, there's some things that you can, what is the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. What is the word you're looking for?
It starts with an I, and it means, like...
Intelligent.
No.
Invigorated.
No. It's like... It's
instigating.
Like, no, it's like an action that you do with your brain.
Intelligence. interpret?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a few things you can interpret this as. A, the alien species wanting to figure out what the heck was going on Earth sent this vegetable that they had grown mm-hmm. to Earth to figure some stuff out.
Yeah.
B, it's just a vegetable.
Vegetableman, yeah.
Yeah, and like C, like this is a... Like, it may not even be an alien. Who knows? Like, they didn't see the flying saucer. Maybe this is some weird new, like, science man that they created for, like, to replace, like, army people.
Right. It could have been a prisoner on the alien ship. It could have been anything. We don't know. We don't even know how it got out. Climbed out, I guess, into the snow. What's funny is it eventually escapes and doesn't freeze outside, even though we've already learned that it can't stand the freezing temperatures. So we know it's invulnerable to bullets because it has no internal organs. It has no blood. We also know when the hand absorbs the blood of the dog it's killed, because it's the thing that's been killing the dogs. By the way, everyone, that's why there's so many dead dogs in the movie. It absorbs the blood like, oh, it eats blood. And then it starts coming back to life like the hand does. We never find out what happens to the hand.
He regrows it. He has two hands the next time we see him.
Who does? No, no, no. We never find out what happens to the hand.
No, we do. He planted the things, remember?
Oh, I thought he took the seeds off of it and planted them.
That is what happened to the hand. I think he just disposed of the rest of it.
Why would he do that? It could grow more seeds. This is Dr. Carrington we're discussing, the mad scientist who apparently the alien creature deposits seeds, which you can then grow into more alien creatures.
This supports my theory of either human-grown army or alien-grown army.
Right. Also, the movie's over because all you have to do is just let it run around in the Arctic. It can't survive out there, and it can't grow.
Which is made clear because it keeps trying to come inside.
It keeps trying to come inside.
It goes into the greenhouse.
If everyone would just leave, it'd be fine. This isn't the alien from the story or from the later movie, which can take over the world. This thing is just, it's plant matter.
Also, if the guy hadn't shot at the alien, who knows what would have happened? It might have just been like, hello.
Right.
I'm here.
I'm here to eat his dogs.
Maybe not. Maybe, like, the dogs clearly were the first thing, like, attacked it first.
Yes.
Obviously, like, who wouldn't? But maybe it was just protecting itself.
So Kenneth Toby and Margaret Sheridan play Captain Patrick Hendry and Nikki Nicholson. They have a relationship. It could be sexual. I couldn't tell, though, because they act so weird with each other. She kisses him at some point, or he kisses her, or someone's tied up into a chair. I don't remember what was going on.
They were having this, I don't know. All I know is that, like, they left on awkward terms the first time he left.
Yeah, who was she?
She was, like, the secretary for the scientists, I think.
Was she?
I think so, because she was the one who was supposed to be like, write this down, and like, blah, 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 and go get coffee.
Oh, that's right. She always had like a piece of paper in her hands.
And also she always was like, anyone want coffee?
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how anyone knew who or what was going on with what relationships, and most of the guys just all look like generic military people.
They all look the same.
Yes. The main guy looks a little older.
Yeah.
And that's it. Nikki Nicholson looks like Nikki Nicholson because she's only one of two women. Margaret Sheridan, she's good. It's funny, if you look at any of these actors, most of their listings say like best known for The Thing from Another World. Kenneth Toby, who was the main guy, is best known for being in the Desilu TV series Whirly Birds. Like, these are just like they're working actors. Like they're not a whole lot of movie stars in this movie, except James Arness, star of Gunsmoke.
Okay, we get it. But he wasn't a movie star at the time.
He was not a movie star at the time. I really liked her. I think she was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, she was great.
She's very charming.
Remember that scene where she's like, why don't we burn it? And then they're like, no, that's stupid. And, mm-hmm. and then one of the guys is like, why don't we burn it? And they're like, great idea.
And you're like, no. Yeah, I guess that is the way it works, isn't it, Nikki Nicholson? Oh, never listened to. So they get the idea to burn it. They set the entire like cabin on fire at one point.
Because somehow it found them?
So they lock it in a thing and then it gets out. They lock it in the greenhouse?
Or something. All I know is that two of the guys have been strangled at this point and hung up on the...
Right, so they say, like, they were hanging upside down, their throats cut. And you're like, oh, okay, like Predator, like, he hung them upside down and drained them of their blood.
I feel like that definitely wasn't him.
Who did it, then?
I feel like it was one of the people. I don't know. You saw the way he was killing those dogs.
That's true.
He wasn't, like, stringing them up, cutting their throats. He was just beating them to death because he didn't have the brain capacity to like drain them of their blood properly.
Yeah, we're never given any sense of like if the alien is smart or if it thinks or if it's just zombie or
its answer to every situation is to beat things up.
Uh-huh.
Like there's no sign of intelligence. There's also no sign, where did he get the thing to cut their throats open with?
Right, right.
What is going on?
How did it overpower him?
The doctor was the only one who was with them at the time.
Right.
He was like, you guys stay here and keep an eye on the dog. He killed them.
But he was a small time wienerman. How did he kill those? I guess they were
surprise.
All scientists. Surprise.
Surprise.
The doctor also tried to befriend it at the end, and he went up to it and was like, let me learn from you. And then it doesn't kill him. It just knocks, it pushes him over, which I was like, aw. Like, here's your perfect chance to, like, murder someone who should probably be killed. And you just pushed him into the wall.
I think he punched him to the wall, actually, because he was standing, the doctor, I'm the monster.
Yeah.
So the doctor's here.
Uh-huh.
He ends up right over there.
Right.
So, like, it wasn't just, like, a shove, because the monster would have had to, like, he would have ended up on the other side.
Right.
It was like a judo throw.
It was a Hollywood push, which is, like, you have to be in frame in the movie, so just fall, but you have to land in the place where the camera needs to find you. So he'll pretend to push you. You just make yourself fly in whatever direction we need you to fly. I think you find out he broke a rib or something.
I don't know. He deserved a lot worse.
Yeah, yeah. He was not a good character. So they set the, they accidentally set the cabin on fire in probably the most exciting sequence in the movie.
For some reason, Nikki is hiding behind a mattress as if that's going to protect her.
She's not hiding behind a mattress. She was
forcefully pushed behind a mattress.
Yeah, Whirly Bird guy grabs a mattress and like puts it over her. And I was like, what's going on?
Stay behind this mattress. You'll be safe from the fire.
Yep, the fire. Everyone knows that these highly flammable mattresses will protect you. I guess it does protect her because she's okay.
No, it catches on fire.
Oh, that's right. And then the monsters. That's when they're like, oh. So what was it? They were like, we're going to set the monster on fire. That'll kill it. And so they throw a bunch of like gasoline or fuel on it. And they set it on fire. Why does it not occur to them that they are inside their own barracks?
Their own wooden barracks.
They're in a wooden building, and they set this monster, this 7-foot monster, aflame, and then he just leaves.
He goes all Frankenstein style and bashes out the window.
Yeah, he's really a 2-bit Frankenstein this whole time. He's all like, and he leaves. Frankenstein's alien, I believe, is the proper designation. This is not the scientist Frankenstein. Although there is a mad scientist in this, so maybe it is a little bit of Frankenstein.
Well, he does try and grow more of these creatures.
He does. They make lovely little plants.
Everything is Frankenstein.
And it does get out of hand, and it does try to kill him. Or not try to kill him. It tries to humiliate him by pushing him into the wall. So like we said, they set up this. They're like, well, we can't just set him on fire because we're idiots and we can't figure out how to do that.
Which they're like, we need something hotter than fire. And I'm like, a nuke? What are you going to do?
And they're like, you know what's really hot? Electricity is really hot. And so they,
because plant matter
hates electricity
so much. It conducts it so well.
If you've ever seen a potato get hit by lightning, it is not a pretty sight. So they rig up the, this is what we were talking about at the beginning, they rig up the wires into a hallway, and they have to lure it into a hallway and get it to walk up this like series of planks which have been electrified or something, and then the fuse blows.
Well, like,
and you're like, oh,
it cut the power at some point.
Oh, that's
somehow.
Right, it turned off the, like, yeah, that's
like,
right.
I guess that does show some sign of intelligence,
but it doesn't, there's not much else going
but
on.
But also, I still think that could have been the doctor.
you're right,
because he wasn't on screen when it happened. I think the doctor did it all.
A lot of what happens in this movie happens off screen is one of the issues. Like, you hear about things happening. Like, obviously they can't show a lot of violence. Obviously they can't show any gore. They can't show any like special effects. You don't even see the spaceship when it's flying. You only see the like matte painting of it like under the ice. So you're working within certain limits here, but they go so far to not show you anything that after a while you're hardly watching a movie. You're just watching people talking about a very exciting movie that's happening just off screen.
I feel like the alien was just doing like what it was doing, like hunting for prey. But no way could it have had the thought process to intelligently string those men up and drain them of their blood.
No.
That's not a thing that it could have done.
Yeah,
which means it had help, which means the doctor did it.
We never get a really good sense of what this thing is or what it's able to do, but they end up burning it to crisp. And the reporter who's with them, but there's this reporter, the reporter character is like throughout this movie, like he is in every scene. He is constantly talking, but he doesn't do anything. He manages to not get a photograph of it ever. And he's trying to write a story about it. And then the whole thing ends with the reporter broadcasting this famous, it's the most famous lines from this movie, which is, tell the world, tell this to everybody, wherever they are, watch the skies everywhere, keep looking, keep watching the skies, is how it ends. And I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? Like, that's not even the point of this movie. It's not an alien invasion movie. It's one monster in the North Pole
that crash landed onto our planet.
Right. It's like, we don't know why it was here. It was just a monster. It was just literally just a monster who could reproduce like a plant. Again, this is not Who Goes There. This is not John Carpenter's The Thing. It's not this aggressive virus. It's just a Frankenstein monster.
I think that I have I've constructed a new thing.
Okay.
So the doctor really wanted to keep this thing alive, right?
Right.
He was like, I want to study it and I want to like learn from it. so far we've seen that the alien hasn't shown any remorse in killing anyone and has actively attempted to kill everyone.
Yes.
Anytime it lays sight on them.
Uh-huh.
So what stopped it from killing the doctor? I'll tell you what stopped it from killing the doctor. The doctor helped trap those two guys in the greenhouse for the alien and helped the alien get their blood.
Okay.
And when the doctor approached it at the end, it was like, oh, this is the guy that helped me before. I'm not going to kill him.
Okay.
And he judo flipped him onto the wall to keep his cover up. And that's why the doctor was acting so weird and suspicious the entire time. Mm. Because he had actually killed those two men to help this weird plant. It's like Seymour.
Oh, like Little Shop of Horrors?
Yes.
It's just another Little Shop of Horrors story. Does it surprise you to learn that this movie was very successful when it came out?
That actually doesn't surprise me very much.
It made nearly $2 million in domestic box office.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, 1951, for a movie that cost like a buck and a half to make. It beat two other science fiction classics that came out that year. The Day the Earth Stood Still and When Worlds Collide, two very famous science fiction films, beat those out. One of my favorite things is from the New York Times review of it. It says, taking a fantastic notion, parentheses, or is it really, close parentheses? I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty fantastic. I'll go so far as to say this is a pretty fantastic notion.
I believe that aliens exist because we're in an infinite universe with infinite possibilities, and there's no way in heck we can be the only living things in this universe. And I prefer to believe that there are other things out there because the other possibility is much more terrifying and awful. They're definitely not plant dog-eating monsters. They probably don't survive on specifically Earth thing blood.
I mean, if you pull back far enough, any movie's possible in that, yes, people are doing things. So, yeah, I guess there's aspects of this that could happen. People are in the military. Sure, and they could go to the North Pole.
Sure, there could be some weird...
That's plausible.
Yeah. So maybe they found, like, an ancient man in the ice. And so, it's just his skeleton, and everyone's freaking out over nothing.
American Film Institute considers it one of the greatest, 100 greatest thriller movies of all time. It was, of course, remade in 1982 by...
Much, much better.
By John Carpenter, a much more faithful adaptation of Who Goes There.
More disturbing adaptation.
A much more distressing adaptation, but also very, very, very close, all things considered, to the original short story.
It has some cool practical effects.
Great practical effects, great actors, famous actors, and just a wonderful production. Unlike the original Thing from Another World, a complete bomb when it first came out and not appreciated at all in its time and horrifically reviewed by none other than such luminaries as Roger Ebert.
That's so stupid.
People just did not like The Thing when it was released. But Thing from Another World, they thought was good.
I've learned something.
Uh-huh.
One, I don't trust professional movie reviewers. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't. There was like, this movie's great, and this one sucks. And usually, they're wrong. Because they don't look at the movie the way that normal viewers look at the movie. They look at it from the film's perspective, like the technical stuff.
Well, I mean, that's a legitimate form of film criticism.
It is.
That's like what,
but
from a should you see this movie or not perspective, I can see
it's pretty terrible way to look at. If the movie's entertaining, listen, we liked The Raven.
I thought you didn't like The Raven. You always mention how much you're like,
I always end up agreeing with you when
that's
you
true.
Say, we like The Raven.
We like The Raven.
This movie was not...
The Raven.
Good.
It was definitely not The Raven. Now, what most people don't know is that this movie was adapted one other time. In 1972, there is a... Oh, I can't remember who made it. But it is a 1972 horror film. I believe... a collaboration with a Spanish film company, but it stars Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and Telly Savalas as a Russian police officer, like complete in like Cossack hat and everything.
What is a Russian police officer doing in the middle of the Arctic?
It's not set in the Arctic.
Is it set in Russia?
It is set on a train. It is called Horror Express.
Oh, I remember you telling me about
this. And I would really enjoy to watch that movie one of these days with you because... It is not a readaptation of Who Goes There. It is a remake, essentially, of The Thing from Another World that incorporates aspects of Who Goes There that neither of the other two movies incorporate. It also doesn't involve an alien, but it does involve a frozen thing. It involves the taking over of bodies. It's strange. But in order to get around the whole, like, we're in the Arctic aspect of it, they simply put you on a train. Because in both situations, you are isolated. You can't get off. You can't run because you're stuck on this.
It's like the train to Busan.
It is very much like Train to Busan. You're stuck in this train, and it is the Thing from Another World combined with Murder on the Orient Express. Like, it literally is that.
I really want to see it.
It literally is that. It's like these eccentric characters on this train. There's something on the train that is taking over people's bodies and warping people's minds. And it is Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. And it is, I will go on record as saying, a delightful film to watch. The special effects
much are better than this one.
It is amazingly well acted. It is cheesy, but also scary at times. Telly Savalas shows up for no reason and may as well just be playing Kojak, even though he's supposed to be like a Russian detective or police officer. It is a delight. If you get a chance to see Horror Express from 1972, check it out. I can't remember where I saw it, rented on a video or something. But this movie is available on DVDs and Blu-rays. You can find special edition DVDs that have like commentary and making of stuff. It's a classic film. People love The Thing from Another World.
I feel like they like it in the sense that, oh, it's a classic, so I have to like it.
No, I was reading reviews from people who were like, I haven't seen this, so I gave it a shot, and hot dog, this is a fantastic movie. And I'm like, I get, like, maybe I was just in the wrong place when I saw it, but it kind of bored me to tears at times.
It's okay. It's a fantastic movie for people who want to think that they can watch horror movies who can't actually watch horror movies.
It's a good horror movie if you don't like scary things, because it's not scary, and the monster's not scary, and you don't see anything except for a hand.
And nothing's scary.
Nothing is scary, but a lot of witty banter. A lot of he said, she said. Somehow that guy got tied to a chair. Why was he tied to, why did she tie him to the chair? Was she being goofy? I don't remember what happened.
Was she
there
being something else? I don't know.
He's like, ha ha ha. And she's
like,
uh-huh.
He wasn't actually tied to the chair, because right, he actually like got out.
And then he like kissed her, or she kissed him. I don't understand
their
relationship.
They were drinking.
I think everyone was drunk the entire time. Everyone was drinking this whole movie. Like, it was such a weird mix.
They said
of
it was coffee, but it definitely wasn't coffee.
It was, oh, you old devil booze. Maybe that's the real bad guy in this movie.
Maybe they were all just hallucinating because their like coffee supply got laced with like LSD or something. She laced them all. I mean, she was talking about like in the beginning, she was talking about like all of this weird stuff. Like, oh, I remember when you got really drunk and started saying weird stuff and blah blah.
Yeah, there's a lot of hilarious banter.
Maybe that's why everyone was so paranoid and crazy all the time, because they were actually just tripping on LSD.
This is 1951. I don't think LSD was even a thing at this point.
You know, let me have my own headcanons.
Timothy Leary's like LSD experiments, I think, were maybe going on at this point, but not real. Not, no. I don't think that.
Okay, let me. I'm not an expert on drugs, Dad.
So anyway, final thoughts? Up, down, yay, nay?
I would recommend this movie if you can't handle scary things.
All right. And you know what? I'm a purist, and I'm like, if you haven't seen The Thing from Another World and you have a little less than an hour and a half to kill, sure, why not?
But then immediately afterwards, watch the other two much better.
Unless you don't like scary things, and then don't. I mean, don't worry about it. But yeah, I'd say, like, you know,
I would give it 2 out of 5 stars.
Two out of five. I think I'd go a little bit higher than that. I might 2. Give it
2.5 out of 5 stars.
I give it 2.5 out of
10.
10. No, I don't know. I'd probably give like 2.5, 3 stars.
It's a good background noise. Good background noise. A lot of witty banter and funny jokes. Ha ha.
So what did Guillermo del Toro think about this movie?
Probably that it was a lot like Frankenstein.
I have no idea, because I can't find anything about him talking about this movie.
Just tweet him and get an exclusive.
He talks a lot about The Thing from 1982.
Are you sure this was...
He goes on about it.
Are you sure this was actually on the list?
I am quite sure this is actually on the list.
Are we going to watch The Thing from 1982?
I think we are. I think it's on the list.
Good, because I really like that movie.
But I guess it does have that Frankenstein theme. I guess it's... I can see where he would like the characters. He would like the setting. It's just... He likes these kind of movies.
It's not like The Raven where it is entertaining.
Yeah, it's just... I think he just likes these auteur-y movies. It has a sense of style.
You know, maybe I just don't get it. And I never will because I don't care enough to.
I just don't know why I wish I had his... Guillermo del Toro, if you're listening, and I know you're not, please, why do you like 1951's The Thing from Another World? Let me know. Just let me know. I mean, I can figure it out. It's a classic science fiction movie. A lot of people like it. A lot of people say it's great. So you're probably one of them. Like, and I bet if I was watching it at another time, I would like it. So who knows? Maybe I'm the Guillermo del Toro here. And maybe... I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Anyway, next time on It's Del Toro Time.
We're watching The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon!
I remember!
Hooray!
It's because they aren't all the same movie now.
The one we just watched was about a mysterious monster who shows up and wrecks havoc. And the next one's...
About a mysterious monster that shows up.
They're not all the same movie, but... And as you said to me once upon a time... We won't have any trouble figuring out why Guillermo del Toro likes this movie. Fishman, pretty lady.
Monster.
Swimming up the river. Yes, it is The Creature from the Black Lagoon, the classic monster movie, the classic tale of the fishman who falls in love with a woman. Spoiler alert. He falls for a woman.
It sounds very similar to.
It's got some
movie.
Serious issues that we'll have to take a look at. I have not seen it since young childhood, and I may have actually only ever seen the sequel, The Return of the Creature. So.
And I have a lot of research to do before we kick this off.
And I can't remember if this is, the one that has an extremely young Clint Eastwood, or if it's the next one that has an extremely young Clint Eastwood. He's in one of the Creature from the Black Lagoon as one of his first one of his earliest roles, so...
You know, I recognize that name, but I can't think of anything he's from.
Clint Eastwood, he yelled at a chair once upon a time. He yelled at a chair. That's all you need to know.
Great.
So until the next time when we talk about The Creature from the Black Lagoon, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you... Is that what you say?
And we'll see you when
okay. For
Del
some
Toro
reason,
time.
It didn't sound right. It didn't sound right. And we'll see you when...
It's Del Toro time.